tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Hi, everyone. Kristen here. I'm the technical tabby here at the Community Cats Podcast. Just jumping in to let you know today's episode is going to be a little different from our usual format. Instead of a traditional interview with our insightful host, Stacey LeBaron, we're sharing the audio from a live workshop, Return to Field, Saving the Lives of Community Cats, which was an advanced TNR program management training that was given by Neighborhood Cats' very own Brian Cordes and Susie Richmond. This is part one of their deep dive into Return to Field, or as you'll hear it referred to as RTF, an approach that has completely reshaped how shelters manage healthy, unowned community cats. If you're familiar with Trap, Neuter, Return, you can think of RTF as the next evolution. So shelters sterilize, vaccinate, and return these cats to their outdoor homes instead of euthanizing them, either for space or resource reasons. And the results have been truly transformative. In this session, Brian walks us through how RTF first took off in Jacksonville, Florida, where a bold partnership between a spay-neuter clinic and the city shelter led to a 90% reduction in euthanasia. It's pretty huge. You'll also hear how Return to Field boosts shelter morale, strengthens public support, and over time dramatically reduces intake. Because this is a workshop replay, you'll hear some references to slides and visuals, but all of the key content comes through loud and clear. Brian and Susie bring decades of field work, policy experience, and practical wisdom to the table. If you do want to check out the visuals, you can hop over to our YouTube channel, search Community Cats Podcast, and you'll find slightly older version of this on the Everything TNR playlist. So with that, let's jump into part one of the replay of Return to Field, Saving the Lives of Community Cats.
I am Kristen. I'm your technical tabby here at the Community Cats Podcast, and I am so excited to welcome you guys to Return to Field, Saving the Lives of Community Cats. It's a very specialized training for program management. I'm going to let Brian introduce Susie and himself. Jua?
Susan Richmond is Neighborhood Cats Executive Director. She was formerly a co-executive director of a large humane society in New York and is now here on Maui. She has a lot of experience with Return to Field. She and I helped launch the program here at the Maui Humane Society. And we also work closely to this day with the city shelter in New York City doing Return to Field. And then there's myself. I'm the National Programs Director for Neighborhood Cats. Susie and I are both co-authors of a book I'll tell you about in just a moment about Return to Field. I've personally returned well over 1,000 cats and been involved in the decisions about Return to Field for at least another 1,000 or so. So both of us have a fair amount of experience in this area. Plus As many of you probably already know, we do an awful lot with Trap, Neuter, Return too. So basically lots of community cat stuff.
Thank you so much, Brian. I apologize for putting you on the spot there. And actually,
I can turn
this whole thing over to you.
All right. Thanks, Kristen. So when we talk about Return to Field, of course, we're talking about community cats. And what is a community cat? It's important for us to kind of be on the same page with our terminology. So a community cat is a cat that's free roaming and unowned. That's the basic definition. Their socialization can range from very friendly to very feral. So it's not a behavioral thing. So feral cats would be like a subset of community cats. And they're often part of what we call a colony. And the way we define a colony is one or more cats that are sharing a common food source and a common territory. Now, Return to Field involves this process that you'll see in this slide here, which is you have your community cat who's out in the neighborhood. Somebody captures him, traps him, brings him to and surrenders the cat at your local animal shelter. So in the past, before Return to Field, if that cat was feral, meaning that he was unsocialized and unadoptable, that was pretty much the end of the line. But with Return to Field, instead, the cat is spay-neutered, vaccinated, ear-tipped, and then after sufficient recovery time, transported right back to where he was found and released. And we'll talk about which cats are eligible for this. But generally, we're talking about cats that, based on their body condition and other factors, were doing well in their neighborhood. And you're putting them back where they were doing just fine. The question often comes up then, what is the difference between Return to Field and TNR? And I think the best way to understand this is that return to field is a form of trap, neuter, return. So you can see by this comparison that in both cases, you have community cats that are being trapped or otherwise captured. They're being all being spayed or neutered and vaccinated and ear tipped, and then they're being returned to their original location. So return to field, just like trap, neuter, return, has all three of those elements. What's different about return to field is what's highlighted in yellow here. The cat is impounded by the shelter, and then the shelter, not the caretaker or the trapper, decides whether or not that cat is going to be returned. So it's the intake into the shelter system and then the decision-making by the shelter that makes return to field a sort of unique form of trap, neuter, return. So with trap, neuter, return, typically we're talking about caretakers or other members of the community who are trapping, who all along intend to return the cat back. And that's why they trap them, is to take them to a clinic. The clinic might be at a shelter, it might not. But the plan all along, barring, oh, a cat that can be adopted or something, is to return the cat to his colony. When a cat is captured with return to field, usually the person who brings the cat into the shelter, who we call the finder, at the term of art there, finder, the finder often does not intend for the cat to come back. So that's another key difference. So it's the shelter making the decision. I'd also point out that with return to field, there's no need to identify a caretaker. The decision to return the cat is based on a number of factors, but knowing who's feeding the cat is not one of them. And also with return to field, the finder may not even, as I mentioned, often the finder does not want the cat back, but the finder's wishes are irrelevant to the ultimate decision. I shouldn't say they're not completely irrelevant, but they're not the crucial factor. So if the finder doesn't want the cat back, that doesn't mean the cat isn't coming back. So return to field has a really, really interesting history, not that long a one. It started in 2008 in Jacksonville, Florida. And what happened was there's a high volume spay neuter clinic there called First Coast No More Homeless Pets. And in 2008, they met with the director of the local shelter, Jacksonville Animal Care and Protective Services is what they're known as now. And Rick Ducharme was the head of First Coast. And he asked the director if he would let him know when ear-tipped cats were impounded at the shelter so that First Coast would have an opportunity to locate the caretaker and have those cats returned to their colonies. So the director, who actually was not an animal welfare person, he was an interim appointment. He was actually an engineer by trade. So somebody who was thinking outside the box, because he was never in the box, he came back to Rick and he said, why don't you take all the community cats, not just the ones that are ear tipped, fix them and return them to their communities. And Rick, with the help of a grant from Best Friends Animal Society and a lot of courage, took on this project and started pulling all the community cats, which were you'll see were thousands of cats a year. They would bring them to their clinic. They would fix them, hold them overnight, and then drive them back to where they were found and release them the next day. This is the results after the first few years. So again, the program started in August of 2008. So that's why you see in 2008, the green bar is the number of cats being returned. The blue is intake and the red is euthanasia. So it didn't get a full year of work until 2009. But you could see even after of 4 or 5 months in 2008, how dramatic a difference it was, how the red bar starts rapidly going down with the green bar going up. So intake dropped, over time, you can see gradually, but cat euthanasia just plummeted right away. And when you get to 2013, 4 or 5 years later, there's a 90% reduction in euthanasia. And you can also see cat intake dropping as well. And that's not as simple as, well, the return to field cats, the return to field program directly impacted intake. But what it did was, what happens is the shelter became the model for how do you deal with community cats. And people started using First Coast and getting community cats spayed and neutered on their own in much, much higher volume as this program went on. So it went from something like, I don't have the exact numbers, but it was something like 500 TNRs were done in Jacksonville in 2007, the year before the program began. By 2013, the number of TNRs in the community was up to 11,000. So that probably had an impact on intake by just reducing the number of cats in the community with all that spay-neuter that was going on. So you can get that kind of synergistic effect from a return to field program. And interesting thing I was looking at just yesterday was, well, how is the Jacksonville program doing today? You know, has this progress been sustained? And the answer is definitely yes. So you can see in 2013, their intake was down to about, oh, it looks like 7,500 or so. In 2023, it was less than 3,000 intake, and they euthanized only 240 cats. So that's only 8%. So that progress over the years has held. So what are the benefits spelled out of return to field? Well, obviously, you see there are lower euthanasia because these cats, the majority of them would probably end up euthanized if they stayed in the shelter. So that's almost a direct one-for-one lowering of that. But by not euthanizing thousands of cats or hundreds of cats or however many you're dealing with, that frees up a lot of resources that you can spend on other programs that are more life-saving and life-affirming. Another benefit is you're not keeping these stressed out cats in the shelter for however long they would be there. And that makes for less crowding, less disease circulating, and just a healthier shelter environment. The public tends to support organizations with higher live release rates, fair or unfair. So when that improves, shelters often see public support increasing in the form of either fundraising or people being more willing to come to the shelter and adopt animals. There's a culture change, both inside and outside the shelter. I mentioned outside the shelter, like in Jacksonville, when the community started taking up TNR after they saw what the shelter was doing with community cats. Inside the shelter can be this really dramatic transformation. You know, we know from research studies that shelters with high euthanasia rates, where a lot of healthy animals are being put down on a regular basis, staff tends to suffer from higher rates of mental illness, substance abuse, job dissatisfaction, all sorts of negative things. Now, when these cats that before were almost, you know, entering the shelter was like a death sentence, and now they're all going out alive, that tends to make for a much more positive work environment and greatly improved morale. Another thing about return to field is, you know, in the past, when we'd be euthanizing cats that came in because they either because we didn't have room for them in the shelter or because they were presenting themselves as feral and unadoptable. Well, you know, those of us who've trapped cats and worked with them know that any cat who's trapped is going to freak out. And a lot of cats, when you put them in a strange environment like a shelter, are going to be very withdrawn and scared. And it takes some time for their true nature to come out. But when you're dealing with thousands of cats coming in and you're overcrowded, you don't have 2 weeks to wait and see whether this cat is friendly or not. We have no idea how many pets are being euthanized when we take healthy animals and we put them down. And when you're returning to field, that's being avoided. And there's also research that shows that if a pet was lost, they have a much better chance of getting back home if they're returned to where they were found than if you wait for the owner to come in, because the reclaim rate for cats is typically extremely low, like in the single digits. So why stop euthanizing, right? So for many of us in the field, it's just the goal in itself is, you know, we want to see these animals live and have fulfilling lives. But there are many other reasons from a policy perspective. So historically, high euthanasia communities or high euthanasia shelters don't see improvements in their intake and euthanasia rates. It's not a policy that leads to those numbers improving. We don't see complaint calls going down. We don't see any impact on wildlife predation because you're not euthanizing cats is not reducing the number of cats in the community. So whatever problems are being caused are not coming down. And so naturally that reflects on a stable or growing population of community cats. On the other hand, and we'll talk about why that is, how come just taking thousands of cats off the streets and eliminating them doesn't reduce the number of cats? If you rely on euthanasia as your policy for community cats, you know, we talked about high stress, high turnover, and poor public relations. So there's a lot of negatives involved in that. But it's important to understand why euthanasia is a dead-end policy, pardon the pun, and does not lead to any improvements. So first off, there's just too many cats in most communities and far too few animal control resources. So even if trapping and euthanizing cats was effective, it would be very difficult to reach a volume that could possibly make that happen. And even if you did, it wouldn't, as we'll explain. There's caretaker resistance. I mean, people care about these cats and they're not going to help an effort that's going to lead to their deaths. Then you have the vacuum effect, which we're going to talk about. And that's where you remove the cats, but the resources remain behind. And those resources just attract new cats. And then there's the failure to capture all the cats in a colony. So if there's a removal effort and you get to 5 out of 8 cats, that's a very temporary gain because the 3 that are left behind will reproduce and quickly get the numbers right back up. So let's talk about the vacuum effect and why that thwarts these efforts to manage community cats through euthanasia. So here we have a colony of 10 cats, and they're at a grocery store, and they eat out of the dumpster. And garbage can was all I could find. I couldn't find a dumpster icon. But the idea is there's a set amount of food put out every day, and there's enough food for 10 cats. That's what we call the carrying capacity of the environment. So it's not like these 10 cats are going to quickly grow if nothing is done. You may hear about this myth, like if you don't do anything, those 10 cats will be 50 in a year, only if more food is put out. Because if there's only enough food for 10 cats, then there will only be 10 cats and you'll have migration and disease and things like that that will keep the number of cats and the capacity of the environment in balance. That's just nature. So in this case, there's 10 cats. Now we've removed them, okay, and we've taken them to the shelter. Most of them probably have been euthanized, and we're good, right? So here's my question to you is, are we okay now? What's the problem in this situation? Why isn't this going to work? There's no more cats, right? The food is still there, and that's exactly the correct answer. You've got the grocery store is clear, right? No more cats, but what about the rest of the neighborhood? It's surrounded by other neighborhoods and other cat colonies and other cats. And if they're not spayed and neutered, then they're reproducing and they're reaching their carrying capacity, whatever that might be. So there's population pressure going on all around the grocery store. And as these cats run out of food, they will start going around and trying to find new food sources. And sooner or later, usually sooner, Adam and Eve show up, right? And they look at each other and they go, lots of food here, no competition. You know, let's stick around here, settle down and start a family, right? And within a couple of breeding cycles, you're right back up to 10 cats. And this was the field's experience over and over again. When trying to remove cats was the dominant form of animal control. And another thing you can say is historically, if removing cats was a successful approach to community cat management, we wouldn't be here talking about this today. I mean, think about the millions and millions of cats who've been trapped and euthanized, and we're still faced with overpopulation. So that's why euthanizing doesn't work. It's just really kind of a pointless exercise that, as I pointed out, has a lot of negative consequences. So instead, you know, like in this situation, well, you know, if we trap Adam or we trap Eve or we trap any of their kittens and there isn't room, they're feral, let's say, we fix them and we put them right back. And now at least one of them can't reproduce. May or may not have population control, depending on how many of the 10 are spayed and neutered, but it causes no more cats to be present than there were before. And you remove all the ills that were happening in the shelter and you don't have thousands of deceased cats. So if we start doing this return to field, putting them back instead of euthanizing them, the question that always comes up for people who are new to this is, won't everybody freak out, right? Isn't the public going to say, oh my God, what are you doing? You're putting cats on the streets? And that is a legitimate concern for sure. You know, it's any kind of new program, especially one that it's much less controversial than it was 10 years ago because it's been adopted in so many places, but it's still controversial. So rather than go by, you know, some kind of emotional reaction and assume the community is going to rise up in arms and storm the shelter, it's better to look at the data. So this was in 2007, this was a survey commissioned by Alican Allies and performed by, I forget which national polling agency, but a legitimate agency. And this is the question they asked. If you saw a stray cat in your community and you can only choose between two courses of action, leaving the cat where it is or having the cat caught, put down. So basically do nothing, leave the cat alone or have the cat euthanized, what would you consider to be the more humane option? And there's the result. 81% said leave the cat alone. Only 14% thought it was better to have the cat euthanized. So let's look at another survey that was done in 2014. This time, the respondents were given three choices. So instead of do nothing, leave the cat alone, or euthanize, they added TNR, basically sterilize and vaccinate the cats and return them where they were. And the response this time, you could see, was also very strongly in favor of three quarters said either leave the cat alone or have the cat sterilized and put back.
When we launched the Community Cats podcast, our goal was simple: share stories and strategies to help cat lovers turn their passion into action. But something amazing happened. Our community grew, and so did our mission. Over the years, we've added webinars, conferences, certification courses, downloadable tools, and a whole lot more to support people who care about cats. So it's time for our name to reflect everything we do. The podcast isn't going anywhere, but our overall platform is rebranding as Community Cat Central. It's the same team, the same heart, and the same commitment, just with a fresh new look and even better ways to help you take action for cats in your community. You'll start seeing updates soon, including a brand new website, smarter email tools, and resources that are easier to access and use. We're so grateful to have you on this journey with us, and we can't wait to show you what's next. In a recent study, 97% of respondents said that pets are family. Communities can play a vital role in helping to keep families together, whether it's reuniting lost pets with their owners, donating pet supplies or funds for pet owners in need, or offering short or long-term fostering. People can help keep pets and their people together. We just have to show them how. Did you know there are resources you can use to help bring attention to the programs you offer to help them do just that? From public service announcements, short videos, printable posters, online and social graphics, and much more. Find your resources at www.petsandpeopletogether.org/campaign-resources. #BeAHelper. Tomahawk Live Trap exceeds customers' expectations by providing them with the highest quality humane animal control products available. Check out their new Pro Series Gravity Door Trap. They feature a door that sets automatically when you open it. No hook or plate setting needed. Use discount code KEEPITHUMANE for 10% off your order at livetrap.com.
So what this suggests is that the public is not against what you're doing if you're doing return to field, that actually RTF is aligned with the majority who favor live outcomes, and they're okay with having community cats running around. Euthanasia is aligned with the minority who complain about the cats and want them removed. So if you're thinking about serving your community, most of them like the cats and don't want them killed. It's hard to see that when you're the one sitting at the phone and receiving calls from the public and you're at the shelter, because when you think about it, if people are going to call about cats, who's going to call? Are you going to get a lot of phone calls from people saying, hey, I just want to let you know, I really enjoy this cat that comes into my backyard every morning and rubs against my legs and I give him a treat. And I appreciate you leaving him here and not taking him. Or are you going to get the call of like, oh my God, this cat is digging up my garden. You have to come and get rid of him, right? Realistically, you're going to get a lot more complaints. You're going to hear a lot more complaints because those are the people who are going to call. So you can get a very distorted view of what public opinion is if you only go by what you hear from the public in the shelter. So it's important to look at this more objective and comprehensive data to understand what's really happening and what public opinion really is. This is a study that was done recently that just explored, you know, who's doing what and what are their demographics. And it did a survey of 7 different communities and there were over 6,000 participants. And what they found was 30%, that's 30% of all residents in these 7 communities were feeding community cats. And that's consistent with other studies that have been done as well, that there's a pretty high percentage of us who may or may not admit it, but we feed our community cats. And the type of person who does this is, it's very diverse. You know, we have a stereotype of, you know, the little old lady in sneakers, but in fact, it's men, it's women, it's younger, it's older, it's every different race, every different household, income level, education level. People like the cats and take care of them. Another study was done on what is the strength of the bond of the attachment between people and community cats, because it's often another myth is that, well, people don't care about the outdoor cats as much as they do about their indoor pets. And this study showed that was not true, at least in this case, that the level of attachment of caretakers to their community cats was just as strong as it is between traditional owners and their pet cats. So people really care about them and strive to take care of them. So let's talk about some of the fears. And there are a number of legitimate ones. So people are going to hurt the cats, right? As we mentioned, you have people bringing the cats in who don't want them back. So isn't the cat at risk of being harmed when you return them against the finder's wishes? Definitely everybody has this fear. So it's not something that's, you know, out of bounds to be concerned about. But after was at least 15 years now of these programs, there's no data that shows a correlation between return to field programs and increased cruelty to cats. They're in Jacksonville, being really the first large-scale program doing this, they were concerned about it. So they microchipped all the return-to-field cats. And after 6,000 cats being microchipped, they stopped doing it because they didn't see any increase in dead cats on the road or cruelty cases or anything that involved any sort of increased violence. So they figured this is a waste of money. Let's spend the money on more spay-neuter. I know here in Maui, where Susie and I are based right now, they microchip all the RTF cats, and they've been doing that coming on 8 years now. There's no evidence of any type of increased violence towards the cats. So that's not to say in an individual case, it isn't a legitimate concern. And we'll talk about that when we talk about eligibility. So there may be somebody who really, you know, there are objective facts. It's not just a general fear that, you know, people out there will harm someone. There may be some individual person where it's like, this is too risky to put this cat back. We got to find another outcome. That is still a factor, but this general concern that cats are going to, you know, throughout the community are going to be harmed is just turned out to be a myth. So what about the fear that people are going to complain to local officials? Well, in fact, they will, some of them. If you're somebody who's used to, you hate cats on your property, so every time one comes by, you put out a trap, you know, with a bunch of tuna, and then you catch the cat and you go and you drop them off at the shelter, and you do that one time, five times, however many times a year, which kind of shows you that if you have to do it that often, it's probably not working. But if you're used to doing that and it's a free service, and then one day you're told you can't, you know, you can bring the cat in, but the cat's coming right back, you're probably not going to be very happy about it. And you're going to call up your council person or the commissioner, especially if the shelter receives public funding, and you're going to complain. So what you need to do with a return to field program is preempt that and make sure that your policymakers and the people who are going to be getting these complaint calls understand what you're doing, and they hear about return to field from you first instead of from the people who don't like that. I also put here, also talk to rescuers. So there is a disconnect at times between kind of your volunteer rescue groups and animal shelters with return to field programs, especially when it comes to friendly cats, cats that are sociable. And it can lead to a lot of trouble. And we're going to talk about that more later, about what happened in San Diego when a rescue group decided to sue the San Diego Humane Society for doing RTF on friendly cats. But if you're communicating, if you're bringing rescuers into the process early on and explaining your policies, what your protocols are and what you're doing and why, then that disconnect is a lot less likely to happen. It's not guaranteed. So prepping people, explaining, communicating will take the bite out of some people being unhappy about it. And again, you're probably not going to get a lot of phone calls from people saying, oh, thank you so much for returning the cat, because it's the squeaky wheel that complains. So what about the fear that cat owners won't have a chance to reclaim their pets? Because when you do a return to field program, especially if you're dealing with a high volume of animals, you want the cats in and out of the shelter as quickly as possible. Well, it's not much of a fear, because the national average reclaim is only 2%. And as I said before, there's research that shows cats that were actually lost pets or just roaming, not even lost, have a much better chance of getting home outside of the shelter than inside.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.